Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode 177 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, as always, great to see you. And the new norm is everything is very busy in the crypto world right now.
Yeah, man. Good to see you. And it's tons of news and everything that happens in the world seems to have a connection to Bitcoin these days.
Yeah, that is true. Well, let's start with the Genius Act. Passed the Senate 68-30. So that's a pretty big number considering it failed once or twice, right? So it's weird all of a sudden the last time through, it's 2/3 majority, right? It's kind of crazy how that works. It's now going to the House. I think Trump has already said, get it on his desk ASAP. He wants to put the U.S. on the forefront of digital asset innovation. So we're heading in the right direction, it looks like.
Yeah, 18 Democrats voted for it. And I think some of the changes they made got the banking industry on board. The main rule, and David Sacks was on the All In podcast talking about this. The stablecoin issuer cannot share the yield with the holder of, like, the retail holder of the stablecoin. So they get to keep that. So banks get to make some money. And the excuse was, well, this is going to just destroy regional banks. Like, why would you hold US dollars in a savings account that makes 0.01% when you can hold Tether or Circle or whatever and make 3%, 4%, 5%? Like, well, okay, banks, get your stuff together. Like, you know, the competition, if one company can do it, why can't the other one? So anyway, that I thought that was they said it outright, like, this is just a concession that had to be made in order to get the bill passed, which, you know, it is. And it's one of those things too. It's like step one, you know, get this thing in, get it moving, and then come back and change rules later. But it's definitely a big step in the right direction. It's taken a long time. I mean, we're like, this has got to be the only thing that passes before the August break. So at least they made some progress.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a ton of news that kind of came out from that that's related. So, like, Wyoming is planning to launch their own stablecoin August 20th. They have yet to pick which blockchain it's going to be on, which is kind of interesting because we're less than 2 months away. But yeah, I mean, this is really opening a ton of new doors for people to rethink the stablecoin space and what it's going to do in general for a lot of different, avenues, right? Just not at the state level, but the financial services level too.
Right. And, you know, the stablecoins, Tether's the number 6 or 7 buyer of U.S. treasuries right now. And so you start launching a bunch of stablecoins. Part of the Genius Act is they have to be backed and audited. I think it's quarterly or monthly. So they're basically saying, yeah, let's just bring on this whole new buyer of U.S. treasuries. And I think we might just see a reformulation of how U.S. treasuries work, because no one's buying the long bonds and everything's about short interest rate or short duration. And so we'll see how it goes. But I mean, you're going to have more buyers. So that's something good. And then you mentioned Wyoming. I have in my notes that Kraken is relocating their headquarters to Wyoming because of the friendly jurisdiction and stuff. So, you know, when you're a digital company and you're mostly remote employees and all that, like, okay, I just change where you're headquartered. It's not a lot of work and not a lot of cost.
Yeah, there is also a couple of large financial players that have, I guess, announced some things, like Fiserv, which is pretty much a public payments giant. They have about a $90 billion market cap. They announced they're planning to launch their own stablecoin by end of the year. And if you look at their network, they have about 10,000 financial institutions and over 6 million merchant locations. What's also intriguing about that is they've said they're planning to launch it on Solana. So that's kind of intriguing to hear that. And then JP Morgan, they just filed a blockchain-based trademark for JPMD, which it doesn't say anything about stablecoin, but all the expectations is that they're probably going to be launching their own stablecoin, which is kind of funny because a few months ago they talked about, I guess there was some stuff leaked out that they were going to team up with some of the big banks and try to compete with Tether and Circle and all that. And even one of their executives came out and said she believes the market may be overcrowded and have too much fragmentation. And yet now the banks are going to do their own version.
Yeah, it's crowded and over segmentation and competitiveness really stinks unless you're JP Morgan and you can just bring a sledgehammer and win, you know? So yeah, you're going to see a lot of this. I mean, it's basically, you know, the starting pistol for all of this, the stablecoin stuff. And I mean, if you are doing transactions with Visa and MasterCard and you now can use stablecoins to transfer funds around, you just got a 3% increase in your bottom line, which is huge. I'm curious to see what happens. Visa and MasterCard's gross margins are like 80%. So that's, you know, they're going to take a big hit here.
Yeah. I mean, it's competition, right? In a free market, good things happen for the investors at the end of the day, hopefully. So we'll see what actually ends up happening with all this and how long it takes for it to happen. I mean, the other big thing is this still has to get passed. So
it has to get passed. But I mean, you can tell the buyers of Circle that went public, they believe it's going to pass. Yeah. That's like a $60 billion market cap now. The price is like tripled since it came out. So yeah, they think it's going to pass.
It's gone like 7x since it came out. It was insane.
Yeah. So, you know, but they're, I mean, we've talked about it before. Their whole shtick is we're going to play by the rules of the United States and be the United States. That's, you know, they've got a Genius Act behind it now. And if that passes, I mean, it's worth the gamble, I would say.
Yeah. Well, so that act is happening behind the scenes too. There's supposed to be a draft coming out today, which is the 24th of June, on the Clarity Act, which is a market structure bill that their Senate subcommittee is theoretically going to release it today. So I'll be intrigued to see if that happens or not. But I mean, they got to do something quick if they want to get it out by August.
Yeah. So I think that a part of that is a de minimis tax exemption of $200. I'm not sure if it's in that bill or if it's just starting to get pushed. Ohio just passed de minimis capital gains tax exemption for $200 and below transactions. And Cynthia Lummis is pushing that but I'm not sure if it's in that bill or if it's in another bill because there's so much going on. But I think that if you can get that passed, which I think you could talk your way into that. Like that's an easy one to, can, you know, even if you don't want to understand Bitcoin, understanding, hey, let people spend $200 without having to make it a taxable event, I think that's something that could get passed.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's at the state level only. So we still need it to happen at the federal level to make everything clear. And the good news is they also talked about, I think, the right to mine and have self-custody in that bill in Ohio too. So which are two other kind of key things that need to happen. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see Ohio. Texas had some pretty big news too. Their governor signed the Bitcoin Reserve bill into law, which now makes them the third state to do so. Now they're probably expecting in the tens of millions of dollars in the near future, which in the grand scheme of things is pretty small. But what was interesting is the governor signed 334 bills into law on Saturday. And this was one of the 16 critical pieces of legislation that they sent a press release out on. So it's definitely one of the more important ones out of that entire list.
Yeah, and I really don't care. I think I read that it was going to start at $10 million allocated for the Bitcoin Reserve. Great. It's not zero, right? I mean, yeah. You've seen it. I've seen it. Every person, every corporation, and every, you know, entity that gets into Bitcoin, they learn more about it and they don't sell. Like I'm not aware of anybody that's gotten into Bitcoin that has just sold everything, gotten out, and went back to buying bonds in a 60/40 portfolio. So for Texas to get off of zero is a big deal. It kind of starts the competition for all the states to do the same. And Texas is way ahead of the game. I mean, they've got the mining incorporated into their power infrastructure, and you know, these things matter. So I think it's important.
Well, it's one of those things too. I mean, when we have conversations with people, it's not, hey, throw 10 grand into Bitcoin as your first purchase. It's throw 50 bucks, throw 100 bucks in and just play around with it. Understand how it works.
Right.
And then all of a sudden there's thousands of dollars that usually follow after that. But I mean, it's kind of the same thing that Texas is doing is $10 million for them is still a drop in the bucket. Yeah. So it's they're playing around with it, see what it looks like, and then they'll kind of go from there, hopefully.
Yeah.
Arizona also had some news too. So their Senate voted to revive the Bitcoin Reserve Bill discussion. It came through with a 16-14 vote, which was pretty much straight party lines, except one Republican voted against it. What the way that I was reading it though is mainly for assets seized by criminal asset forfeiture. So, and the last bill they did was really just based on abandoned assets. So they, I think their governor had still vetoed what last month or whatever bill to allow them to use their public funds to buy Bitcoin. So this is, they're getting closer to getting to where they need to be, but they're still a little ways away from being like the New Hampshire of the world.
Yeah. And it's going to happen. So, you know, it's like Texas, they're getting, I mean, I suppose they're still on zero, but they're kind of setting themselves up to be able to make some sort of Bitcoin holding, even if it is forfeiture or just keeping stranded assets.
Yeah. You mentioned Circle earlier too, and what was going on there. So they had an amazing IPO here in the US, incredibly good returns. It kind of sucks. I was reading a little bit about doing it as a SPAC versus an IPO, and the SPAC would have made a lot more money for the employees, which is probably why we're starting to see a lot of those come up, even with like Pomp and his new one.
Mm-hmm.
But OKX is looking now into an IPO in the US. They don't consider the US an impossible market anymore, which is kind of good to hear.
Yeah.
If for those people that aren't familiar with OKX, they are the second largest exchange in terms of overall trading volume in the world. So for them to come to the US is kind of a big deal. It's, I think Binance is the biggest and they are number two.
Yeah. And along the same lines, the X, formerly Twitter, is going to offer investing and trading platform integrated into their social media platform. So you're looking at more and more ways for people to get into Bitcoin and crypto easily, with the US getting a little easier to deal with. So I think you're starting to see the kind of the consequences of a more friendly Bitcoin and crypto administration.
Yeah, it sounds like they're kind of somewhat compete with Robinhood with their platform there. Yeah. And there's a lot of talk about coming out with a credit or debit card kind of tied to X2. So that will be intriguing to see when that actually happens. You mentioned Kraken moving to Wyoming. They are also enabling Bitcoin staking thanks to the Bitcoin protocol Babylon. So the rewards we've paid out in the Babylon's token Baby, it will be available in the US except for California, Maine, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Washington, and Wisconsin. Also available in the UK, Australia, and the UAE. So I'll be intrigued to see what goes on there. I mean, they talked about they have a ton of Bitcoin just sitting there from people, and this would allow them to get a little bit of return on their Bitcoin that they do keep on exchanges, which you should not keep very much Bitcoin on exchanges.
Yeah, I need to figure out where the yield is coming from too.
Yeah, I haven't looked into it much, but it did kind of pop up and was kind of intriguing to understand what they're doing. There's another company we talked about a few weeks ago that was going to let you stake your Bitcoin in your own wallet for like 12 months and earn yield. So I don't know if they're doing something similar, or I don't know. There's so much going on, it's hard to kind of keep up with it sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm after dipping my toes into the BlockFi pool and then kind of pulling out when things got a little fishy, and then dealing with like, or paying attention to that bankruptcy and what they did, it's pretty eye opening. I'm not jumping back into there.
Yep. No, I unfortunately took the brunt of a lot of that Voyager and Celsius and all that good stuff. So yeah, it is going to be very skeptical moving forward for sure. Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365 day money back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes, or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast. speaking of someone who's not skeptical, Strategy bought some more Bitcoin. So another 245 Bitcoin, which isn't much, but it's still $26 million. Their new total is up to 592,345. What was kind of cool about it is no common shares sold. You use the Strike and the Strife proceeds to buy all of it. So it's still exciting to see.
Yeah, that's 4 weeks of them buying Bitcoin without using common share ATM or convertible notes, which are the first two ways that they bought over the last 4 or 5 years. So that they're kind of starting to stand on those vehicles, which I think is great. I think you should see the stock price start to trade a little more in line with what you see on the Bitcoin price. So for me, I'm curious to see how things go. As far as Strategy goes in stock price, there June 30th is the last day for the second quarter. If Bitcoin's price is above 95,000, then that means that Strategy will be eligible for inclusion into the S&P 500. It doesn't mean that they will be there, but it means that they'll be eligible, and then they'll, you know, they got to be selected, and there's a, I believe there's a committee that picks in or whatever, but 95,000, and then for, it's something crazy, like for every $1,000 of the Bitcoin price above 95, then they have $1 billion in profit that quarter to show. Thank so, God. You know, 105,000 seems to be a reasonable number based on the fact that the price dipped to like 99.5. We had an Israeli-Iranian bombing skirmish, and then the U.S. laid down a bunch of monster bombs, and you know, we had some global turmoil, and then and Bitcoin's price barely cracked it back into five figures. And so I would say that their strategy is looking pretty good to finish this second quarter pretty strong. And then you could see, who knows what happens to the price, you know, the stock when you start to get on people's radar who are tracking companies that are about to be included in the S&P 500. There's a lot of passive income, a lot of ETFs do that. They buy regardless of that. You don't even look at the business financials or anything else. If it's in the S&P 500, then you get an allocation. And that allocation is greater based on market cap. And I don't remember the number, but Strategy is going to be jump. If Strategy jumps into the S&P 500, it doesn't come in at like 500 or 499. It comes in at like 200. Like it's a big company. So, or it's got a large market cap, you know, for a company that just broke into the S&P 500. So yeah, they're doing some cool stuff. If they get into the S&P 500, that'll be more funds to flow in, more buy pressure, more Bitcoin buying, you know, all of those things. So the Strategy's stuff is working pretty well.
Yeah. Well, the Bitcoin treasury companies is kind of taken off. We've been talking about that a lot. I think the total number of Bitcoin treasury firms is over 200 at this point. And if you look at last week alone, those companies added $1.24 billion in Bitcoin to their treasuries. I think that only came from like 18 companies. So it's amazing to see Fold got into the mix again. So we've talked about Fold before, cool little debit card and gift card that they do. They're planning to raise $250 million to buy some more Bitcoin. I think the big news is probably Semler Scientific. They set their new goal to get 105,000 Bitcoin by the end of 2027. They want to be the second biggest holder of crypto, right behind Strategy. So what's crazy is right now they have 4,449. So they are planning to get over 100,000 Bitcoin by the end of 27 at this point, which is a lot.
Yeah, I have that in my notes as well, because trying to get to 105,000 Bitcoin, I mean, that's a lot if we were at $20,000 a Bitcoin, and as you buy, the price goes up. You know, you're already at 105, or you're at 105,000, and it doesn't seem like you're going to be buying anything in the 70s and 80s. You know, everything's going to be in the six figures. So good for them. I listened to Eric Semler talk in the last week. You know, they're a healthcare company. And he was asked point blank, like, why do you even focus on the healthcare side of the business? And he's basically said, we've got some things in the pipeline for like FDA approval and medical devices and things like that. And he feels like it's kind of dumb to throw all of that away while, you know, and they're in the seventh or eighth inning of the ball game to get that stuff approved. But you could tell it was kind of hard for him to admit, like, yeah, we probably shouldn't worry about making money by selling things, and we should probably just run the Bitcoin strategy. So I don't know where this Bitcoin strategy goes. You know, the more companies that jump in, the more likely it is for this thing to collapse. But if they're buying Bitcoin, you know, these public companies are going to compress this MNAV. I think the losers will be the stockholders. You know, if they're buying at 6, 7, 8 MNAV because they think things are going to quadruple, but it just doesn't because you got too many players and there's too much rehypothecation, everything collapses. But these companies, they shouldn't be forced to sell their Bitcoin because if they lose, they're losing investor money. They're not, you know, unless they loan out the Bitcoin or they start doing rehypothecation games or do all these stupid things that everybody's done so far. I feel like from a Bitcoin standpoint, things are okay. I feel like there's going to be a lot of losers on a US dollar basis. So,
yeah, I mean, time's going to tell. There's still a lot of other ones that are jumping to the game. So Pomp has a $1 billion merger coming up to create ProCap Financial. And their goal is going to be provide Bitcoin native financial services, which is kind of exciting. I mean, I know Strategy has been talking about that. A few others have been trying to do some of that already, like Strike. But that will include a $750 million amount to create a Bitcoin treasury, which is the largest initial fundraise for a public company to buy that initial Bitcoin treasury piece. So that's exciting to see, and I'm hoping that goes well. I mean, you have another guy, Pomp, who is right up there with one of the biggest bulls in terms of Bitcoin. So I'll be intrigued to see how that goes as well.
Yeah, and I like it. It's kind of like Jack Mallers. I like these guys that they go on CNBC. They know how the traditional finance games are played. They, you know, speak that language, and but they've also been around Bitcoin long enough to watch all the failures happen and know why they failed and know why BlockFi and Three Arrows Capital and all these things blew up in FTX. So, if those types of people can be in the lead, then I think the vast majority of this could go without just tanking the Bitcoin market, and it could just screw up these companies. But then you'd end up with, like, if Jack Mallers does something to put 21 at risk, you know, it's completely on purpose, right? Like, he knows. And so, and Pomp's the same way. You know, he sounds kind of like an investment bro and all that, but when you listen to him long enough, and I listened to him quite a bit, you know, starting 4 or 5 years ago, less nowadays, but when he gets on CNBC, he sounds good. Like, he understands everything, and he talks like passively condescendingly to everyone. Like, but he understands what keeps being done incorrectly in Bitcoin, and he knows what's going on in TradFi, and he understands, like, the bond market and rehypothecation and what goes, you know, basically he knows where the trap doors that have already been stepped on are. And I think a lot of these guys that are going to get into this will step on the exact same trap doors that Three Arrows Capital and BlockFi did. But Jack Mallers, these guys, you know, they may find something new to step on that blows things up, but at least their eyes are wide open. So I'm it's cool with me. I don't think I'm going to buy any more of these companies. Like, I allocate just a little bit of play money, like coming off of dividends, but like, I think I'm just done. Like, I've there's enough chips on the table. Somebody will come out with an ETF that I can buy that'll just do this for me.
Yeah, it's coming soon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Communications, they just invested $384 million into their Bitcoin treasury. What's interesting is they are a semiconductor cellular IoT company. So nothing to do with Bitcoin, but they see a huge value in this Bitcoin treasury thing. So that's interesting as well. And then Metaplanet, of course, another big one. They just bought 1,111 Bitcoin, so they're now at 11,111. Their goal, of course, by the end of the year is 30,000, right, which is another almost 20K. And they want to get to 210,000 by the end of the year 2027. So there seems to be kind of a disconnect in what Semler thinks is going to be number two and what Metaplanet thinks is going to be possible. But yeah, they're going to be kind of a force to be reckoned with as well in that space.
Yeah, and it's funny to me, man, because I mean, we're talking about big dollars, right? Like billions of dollars of Bitcoin purchases and all that. And these guys are like almost like numerologists with these number games. Like Semler wants 105,000 Bitcoin. All right, we'll double that. It's 210, right? 21. You know, Metaplanet's 21. There are 210,000 Bitcoin. You got like he bought last week. He bought 1,112. This week he bought 1,111 to give him like 6111111 Bitcoin. So, and then you got Michael Saylor did a speech at Bitcoin Prague, and it was like Bitcoin's going to be 21 million per Bitcoin in 21 years. And then it will appreciate by 21% going forward. Like, we get it, guys. 21. I got it. Check. Like, we don't have to keep pounding this. So, I did a lot of numbers games with sales and proposals. And, you know, there's a lot of psychology with numbers. But it's like these guys, every one of these guys is all about making these numbers. You know, it's not like, oh, you know, how much money can we offer? You know, there's not a spreadsheet that kicks out everything that in multiples of 21. So it just kind of stands out to me.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to see that happen. Coinbase has the big news too. They just received the Luxembourg crypto license, which really allows them to offer their complete range of services to all 27 EU member states. That's equivalent to about 450 million people. So that, I mean, Coinbase for a while was starting to look way outside the US because, kind of going back to the comment about the US being somewhat of an impossible market. And now they have it with Europe. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what this does for Coinbase now too.
Yeah, no, good for Coinbase, good for Europe. You know, like the thing about Bitcoin and Twitter is you're just paying attention to stuff and people are like, well, what about Europe? And can we buy this in these countries? And it's like, oh yeah, man, not everybody's under the same umbrella here. And even though it's weird because Bitcoin doesn't care what country you're in, but you know, these companies and countries have to come together on stuff. So yeah, Coinbase has been around a long time. You know, it's a pretty trusted exchange. So good for Europe to have access to it.
So speaking of Europe, Norway came out and said they're looking at possibly banning all new Bitcoin mining to prioritize for other industries. So their Labour Party wants to redirect the power to industries and economic sectors that would be better for the national interest, which I read this and I was like, what is going on? So it doesn't matter if you can pay for electricity, you have to get approved on what you're allowed to use electricity for. Like, it's amazing.
It's really bad. Like, if the government decides what electricity can be used because it's morally superior or better for the progress of the country or the economy, like everything's screwed up, right? Yeah. Like, oh yeah, yep, you're running your refrigerator in winter, you need to put your food outside. Like, why would you run your refrigerator in the winter? I mean, it's there's a million different things. Oh, you shouldn't open that company. We don't need another restaurant in this town. You need to open something else. It's like that, the lack of freedom there is unbelievable. I mean, it's that's a dangerous step. And if people want to mine Bitcoin, then let them mine Bitcoin. I mean, you know how many inefficient uses of electricity are happening all the time? Going after any one, if you go after one, then you kind of need to go after all of them. But, you know, I mean, there's hobby welders in their basement just welding things for fun as like art. There's no way you're going to allow that if you don't allow Bitcoin mining. I mean, where do you draw the line on what's a good upstanding use of electricity and what's not?
Well, I think in the past we've talked about Christmas lights and how much those use. I mean,
right.
There's nothing there, right? So are we going to outlaw Christmas lights every year now too? And what's crazy to me is like this is turning into the same thing that Russia and China have been doing. So now you're saying, all right, Norway's going to follow in Russia's lead. And it's like, what? Is that who you want to be compared to right now, is Russia?
Yeah, no, you don't. But while we're talking about mining in countries, France rejected the Bitcoin mining proposal to stabilize their grid or add some flexibility to their grid that we talked about last week. So that didn't take long for them to reject that, which is dumb. There's no reason to, if you did a study if you were primarily nuclear on your grid and you did a study about what the benefits may be for Bitcoin mining, I think even the least technical politician would be interested in seeing what they have to offer, but they're not going to take a look at it. So that's dumb.
Well, it's amazing. Speaking of France, we've talked about some of this in the past. They just had their 10th wrench attack in 2025. So the kidnappers targeted a 23-year-old in Paris. I think they ended up, his partner or whatever, had to give them $5,000 in cash and a ledger with some Bitcoin on it. They haven't released any of the details other than that. But there's now been 32 worldwide wrench attacks this year, 10 of which have been in France, which is crazy that France is this hotbed of it. Last year was, I think, the highest number of attacks in a year, and that was 36. We're at 32 right now. We're halfway through the year. Like, yep. This is just wild to kind of see this happening. And I guess I'm wondering if it's ever going to change and if people are going to get somewhat penalized for doing this stuff, because it sure doesn't seem like it.
No, I mean, it's not good. But, you know, multi-sig and things like that, you can just feel like, I can't give you any Bitcoin if I wanted to give you any Bitcoin. It's like, yeah, you can knock me out with that wrench, or you can not. Either way, you walk out of here with nothing. So, you know, there's definitely ways to protect yourself, but, you know, life's full of risk.
Yep. All right, so let's jump away from Europe for a sec, because there's a couple other things that are kind of intriguing. South Korea, we've talked about them here a lot lately. They just submitted a plan to release spot crypto ETFs in the second half of 2025. So in addition to that, they're also going to, the plan includes lifting restrictions on yuan-based stablecoins. And we talked about that too. They wanted to stop the capital flight away from their dollar, their yuan. So that's kind of intriguing to see. I'm still amazed that South Korea hasn't done this already and been ahead of the game compared to the U.S. We thought the U.S. was kind of dragging their feet, and now all of a sudden they're becoming the one that everybody else is following.
Yeah, and I got to think that, like the U.S., you know, when those spot Bitcoin ETFs came out, everybody's like, well, people can buy it directly if they want to. And, you know, the high end would be $10 billion flowing into the spot ETFs. We like 5x that in the first year. And so I would think Korea would probably have the same kind of mentality before it gets approved. Well, Korea is really big into Bitcoin and crypto, and they all buy and sell it on their own, and da, 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 da. And then they're going to launch these Bitcoin spot ETFs, and corporations are going to buy it in like a big way. So I would consider this to be pretty bullish.
Yeah. Thailand made a pretty bullish announcement too. They are planning to waive capital gains taxes on crypto sales through licensed platforms for the next 5 years, from 2025 to 2029, which is kind of a big deal. I think part of a real push to make the country kind of this global digital asset hub. What they believe is that the Thai crypto hodlers are holding about $180 billion of crypto. So there is, I think, a chance that it increases their entire economy quite a bit if they do this. Now, the, I guess, con or question mark to all of this is Thailand's been really good about making it difficult for you to be able to go through these licensed platforms, and then you almost have to be a Thai citizen, so you can't just be this foreign person that comes in and sells your crypto over there and doesn't pay any taxes and then walks away. So I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued to see what does happen, and if my hope is that something beneficial does happen for the country, and then you'll see other places like the United States do something like this to try to bolster the economy as well.
Yeah, the more jurisdictions that are tax friendly for Bitcoin and crypto, the better, because it just puts more pressure on everybody else. So I'll take it.
So speaking of tax pressure / tariffs, the Chinese Bitcoin miners are looking to exit now to the US to avoid some tariffs. What's intriguing about this is 90% of all the mining hardware for Bitcoin comes from China currently. So to have those guys set up some sort of US location, that's kind of a big deal. And it's making, I guess, what Trump said, the US being the center of the world for Bitcoin mining, start to come true.
Yeah, I think there's a lot on the mining side in this week, you know, different countries getting involved and kind of pushing things up and down. But one thing that stood out, I mentioned Israel and Iran, and when we dropped bombs on the nuclear sites in Iran, coincidentally, there was a big drop in the hash rate that people picked up on. It looks like it's just in the noise. It doesn't look like they're like we bombed Bitcoin mining facilities, but it was pretty funny because it's like in the future, that could be something that happens, right? Like the mining could be a national security concern. And instead of doing what we used to do for oil in the Middle East, we could be doing the same thing for Bitcoin mining and just blaming it on nuclear issues and things like that. So, you know, that's not what happened, but the President of the United States is pro mining in the US and also has a family business in the mining industry. So it would be, it's kind of one of those little glimpses into what the future might be like, which would be pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, the tariffs are meant to drive innovation, manufacturing, and things like that outside of China and back into the United States. And so, you know, you could see a shift there.
Yeah, I did see, speaking of the president, we've been talking a lot about world liberty and their ownership there, that apparently dropped from about 60% ownership to 40% ownership. So they're trying to divest some of that to make it not be the center of all the discussions for all these crypto legislation on how much money that they're making. So hopefully that continues to go down and where it's a small piece of the overall discussion, but we'll see.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's helpful.
Yep. So speaking of some other treasury company concepts, Sol Strategies, they just filed to be listed on NASDAQ. So they are already listed in Canada, but they want access, of course, to the US funds, since the US seems to be the country that is leading in terms of investing in crypto. I think their ticker symbol they're asking for is STKE. And if you look at like Cantor Fitzgerald, they put out a 72-page report that talked about Solana treasury companies will probably outperform here coming up soon. So Sol Strategies is one of those. They're not the largest, but they are definitely one of those. So it'll be intriguing to see if they get listed on NASDAQ, if that makes them kind of skyrocket from here.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. I mean, there's an Ethereum, a company that did an Ethereum reserve company, and it didn't go well. But everybody's going to try stuff. I mean, that's what innovation is. Some of the stuff will stick.
Yeah, so I know I'm bringing up Cardano because I like to talk about them, I guess, right? There's an ETF approval that has hit its highest percentage yet on Polymarket. So it's at 79% in 2025 right now, which is the highest it's ever been. Bloomberg actually calls it 90% on their end in 2025, along with Doge, Polkadot, Hedera, and Avalanche. They say Solana, XRP, and Litecoin are at 95% this year. So that's a lot of ETFs on altcoins that are just around the corner in the next less than 6 months at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Bitcoin led the way per usual, and the altcoins will be behind it. I don't know what happens. I don't know if we get the normal Bitcoin cycle that is followed by an alt season and all that, or if things are just different, but we'll see.
And then another one that we haven't really talked too much about is ICP, Internet Computer. They just announced the integration of Solana and ICP. They already had an integration with Bitcoin and Ethereum. So now there is a way that you could put smart contracts together that could integrate with all three of those major blockchains, which is kind of exciting to see.
Yeah.
Reddit also is having some interesting conversations. We've talked about World's eye scanning technology. They are considering using that to verify that people aren't AI bots on Reddit. What's crazy is they are following Tinder's lead because Tinder was one of the first ones to do that. So I still think there's better options out there, but apparently that's one of the options that they're considering.
Yeah, I mean, we just had like 16 billion usernames and passwords get hacked across Google and all those other companies, all the like major tech companies. So donating all of your biometric data to a company is maybe not the safest bet to keep to maintain your privacy and security.
Yeah. So speaking of hacks, just had a bunch of scammers get access to some of their emails. when they sent a bunch of emails out. I don't think it's caused too many problems, but just as a reminder, please don't ever give out your wallet backup keys to anyone. Like, doesn't matter where it's coming from. Nobody needs that. That's for you. Keep it to yourself.
Right. No, I got a text message from someone who's an older lady who's into Bitcoin and stuff, and shot me a screenshot of a text message from Coinbase saying that her password's trying to be reset, and you know, if it's not her, to dial this number and blah blah blah. And she's like, is this a scam? I'm like, yes, this is 100% a scam. Don't call that number. So yeah, they're out there.
Yeah. So, and then one of the other interesting things I saw, I think we talked about a different soccer club last week, FC Barcelona, which is a soccer club valued at over $5.5 billion. They are releasing a crypto wallet for their upcoming NFT called Barca.pass. It allows you to create an avatar that you can use in their upcoming mobile racing game. What's interesting there is it's built on Root, which Root is a gaming-focused L1. It's EVM compatible, so it works with the Ethereum network, but it also uses XRP as its gas token. So I'm kind of intrigued to see how this goes and where it goes, but I mean, it's another huge athletics organization that is incorporating NFTs into the space and gaming and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, should be interesting to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that was a super complicated thing to follow, that a soccer club is going to release NFTs that attach to their gaming platform for racing. I was like, why wouldn't it be, this seems way too complicated. Like, why don't we just do soccer team, soccer NFT on a blockchain, done.
Yeah.
I'm just, engineering just tells me to keep things simple.
Well, you don't really hear much about Root, but it's kind of intriguing to see if this will work or not, kind of thing.
Well, yeah, there's just, when you start to compile things on top of each other, you propagate risk and it makes it easier for things to not work. But whatever, man, let it roll, see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's, when we're talking about Ripple, we haven't really talked much about them, but it's kind of intriguing. XRP has been what they've been basing their entire future on for so long, and now they've just released a stablecoin, RLUSD. And if this stablecoin thing passes, why would people use XRP to transact around the world when they could just use a stablecoin, right? So yeah. I don't pay too much attention to Ripple and XRP, but that something else is going to have to change for them to really be able to have a ton of price appreciation moving forward.
Right. And people have talked about, like, why not use a stablecoin instead of Ripple? And they've been saying that for a long time. So it's kind of funny that Ripple's like, well, maybe they're right.
Yeah. All right. What else did I miss?
I mean, I'll tell you, the only thing that I failed to jump in at when we were talking about European countries is that the Swiss National Bank cut rate to 0%. So they cited the economy and inflation and turmoil created by the U.S. tariff rules. And so we're back to some 0% interest rates out there. I mean, it's crazy that money is going to happen. You can't get away from it. It doesn't matter. People are going to drop bombs. People are going to lower interest rates. People are going to print money, like death and taxes. It's like, it's inevitable. So buy Bitcoin. Like, that's your defense.
So everybody that was doing the Japan carry trade is now going to jump over to the Swiss and do it there.
And not only that, Donald Trump's been putting a ton of pressure on the Fed to lower interest rates. And I mean, he's calling Gensler every name that he can, or not Gensler, Powell. He's calling him every name that he can come up with. He's a dumb guy. It's like everybody else is lowering interest rates. Why aren't we lowering interest rates? You can just raise them later if you need to. Like, literally, we can't pay our debt. We need the interest rates to be lower to help us out. And if you're not, you're dumb. So anyway, it's going to happen. Like, there's no way around it. So yeah, that was the only piece I had left.
Well, yeah, I mean, you talked about just go buy Bitcoin. We've had now 10 weeks of inflows. This whole war with Iran, I mean, I think it started with a little bit of a dip at the beginning of the week, but I think I'll be intrigued to see what happens by the end of the week. If if all of a sudden people jump back in, or if we really have kind of a down week. And this will determine what people view as a safe haven moving forward within in the asset space.
Yeah, I definitely like how Bitcoin handled this, the kind of global turmoil, World War III, nuclear war, blah, blah, blah. Barely hit a dip. Like, yeah. I mean, like 24 hours, full recovery. No, you know, like nothing concerning about it. So I don't know that it's a safe haven yet, but it's not trading like it's the riskiest thing out there. So I gotta like that.
Yeah, well, I guess not that I think anybody wants a war to happen. Prayers go out to everybody that's kind of involved with all of that. But the focus here has really been what's going to happen to Bitcoin and where things are going to go. And that's going to be something that is probably going to affect it quite a bit. And not just Bitcoin, but everything else in the world too. So kind of a crazy time right now.
Yeah, like it'd be great if we could get all these tensions reduced back to kind of where things were more chill and it was easier to focus on Bitcoin and my newsfeed wasn't bombarded with like all this random stuff, like foreign, you know, I'm focused on like macroeconomics and Bitcoin and my newsfeeds and the algorithms giving me a whole lot of like war stuff. I'm like, yeah, I need to pay attention to it, but it's like my least favorite thing to pay attention to.
Yeah. Well, hopefully things continue on the crypto side. We'll have another fun week to talk about next week. There's so much stuff happening. It's exciting to see all the positive news coming out of all this. I mean, yes, there's always going to be some negative stuff too, but majority of everything we've talked about is pretty freaking impressive. So hopefully the House will take care of the Genius Act very quickly and we'll actually have some true legislation that's kind of gone through the US government and actually been made turned into law here pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, by next week, we should have some real corporate news on strategies, Q2 earnings, and we should have some government stuff coming on the Genius Act. Like, yeah, end of Q2 is going to be, we could finish really strong.
Yep. Awesome. Well, as always, appreciate the conversation, Hal. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.